This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is Stephen A. from Hollis, Queens, and the Michael K. Show starts now. Holla at your boy, Michael, Don Juan, and Peter.
Thank you, Stephen A., and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Thursday. It's April 21st, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20 hours, that's your responsibility. We'll quickly go around the bases, brought to you by Nissan. Tigers lead the Yankees 1-0, bottom of the seventh inning. That's not good. The Mets, in the bottom of the sixth inning, have runners on first and second with two men out, and they lead the Giants 5-1, trying to take 3 out of 4 from the San Francisco Giants. So the Mets are playing well. The Yankees, even in winning the first two games against the Tigers, they have not been able to hit. And Jeff Passan had a story the other day that's very concerning. They're just throwing that many home runs in baseball. I don't know if the ball is dead. I don't know if the humidifier in every single ballpark is the key. But the bottom line is this, everybody. If their home runs are down, then Yankee scoring is going to be down. Their slugging is down. They have not hit with runners in scoring position. They've been gifted two games by the Tigers, and now they're losing 1-0 to a Tiger team that started Michael Pineda. And I don't know if you guys saw, Michael Pineda must be at least 3 bills.
Yes.
Am I right, Don?
Something happened.
Wow.
Well, I know what happened. He's eating.
Wow.
Well, he's doing well.
Well, he shut him down for 5 innings, and now Yankees into their bullpen. And once again, Jordan Montgomery can't get any run support. So that's where we are. We go around the bases, brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store on NissanUSA.com. All right, we're going to start with the Nets. We
Even
all
Celtics.
Watched it. Let's start with the Celtics. The Nets were up by 17 in the second quarter. They're up 11-0, 9 points by Bruce Brown to start the game. And then it fell apart. It fell apart. It was unusual to watch. And the thing that I got, and I know that you saw this too, Peter, I don't know if I've ever seen Durant have a worse game. Now, Kyrie has good games, bad games, so he didn't have a great game after a great game in game one. But Durant was hit constantly. They have 3 guys on him. They're making him uncomfortable. And I think that Udoka, the head coach of the Celtics, who spent a year on the bench with the Nets, knows how to defend this guy, and they are really executing the game plan perfectly. If Kevin Durant's not going to be able to go off, and you can look at Kevin Durant's numbers, and it doesn't look terrible because he hit all those free throws, but both he and Kyrie were non-existent yesterday, and not too many teams come back from down 2-0 in a best-of-7. Let's see if the Nets could do it.
Listen, Michael, there are people who 2 days ago were scoffing at Marcus Smart winning Defensive Player of the Year. He showed up to the game yesterday, I'm sure you saw, wearing a Ric Flair-like robe that said DPOY on it. And not just him, you're right, Udoka as well. They have something that other people don't have. And it makes sense, right? I mean, if you're with Kevin Durant all the time, you probably know the things that make him uncomfortable. And they are doing – I've never seen two – let me not say never. I don't remember the last time I've seen two stars like Kyrie and KD blanketed in that way in the second half. You got the impression, Michael, even while the Nets were still up 4 or 5 points, they were not going to be able to hold on because nothing was working with Kyrie and KD. And then, for whatever reason, Ime Udoka has figured something out with this team where all of a sudden they've been a 2-superstar team now for, what, the last 3 or 4 years? And they haven't been able to really play like that. You look at them on paper and you say, wow, they look like they could be Golden State East. That you have these 2 young players who are amazing, your Splash Brothers, if you will, though I'm not saying either is Steph or Clay. And then you have a Draymond and Marcus Smart, this heart defense guy. But it just didn't come together. I'm not saying they're going to the championship, but he has this team playing together.
But what's happening here, it's twofold. It's what the Celtics are doing and what the Nets are not doing. Yeah, the Nets are being out-defended and they're being out-coached. And over 82 games, skill is going to win out. But when you get to the playoffs, they start to play defense in the playoffs. You start to game plan in the playoffs. Coaching matters in the postseason. And I don't want to hear about, well, look how well they played against this team or that team in the regular season. Not everything's even in the regular season. You might be catching a team on the third game of four nights, second of back-to-backs. Maybe they're not 100% for the game. Maybe they don't care about winning the game. But you get to the playoffs, it's the same team every night. Game plan for them. Defense matters. Coaching matters. And I don't think they've got the coach or the defense to do it. I think they're done. And they're getting exposed right now because they can't outskill their way through a best-of-seven series. Not a team this good. Had they been a one or a two seed and you're taking on a Toronto or you're taking on a Charlotte or you're taking on somebody like that, yeah, your skill will overcome. That's why these great teams find ways to make short work in the first round. But when you end up being a seven seed and now you got to go up against a really good Celtics team that's got a better coach and better defense, you're going to get exposed. And that's what's happening here.
It's a good question to ask, and I don't know the answer to it. And I don't think the Nets are out of it, as Don does think they're out of it now. I mean, if they win the two games in Brooklyn, it's a different story. And I would hope that the players themselves could figure it out. But let's say they lose this series. After all the money the owner of the Nets pays for this roster and all the tax he pays, would they get rid of Steve Nash? Would Kevin Durant allow them to get rid of Steve Nash? Because they are very, very close. They had a great coach in Kenny Atkinson, and he was too coachy. Let's put it that way. They wanted a free and easy guy, let the players do their thing. And Kyrie was the one who was quoted at one point saying, the players coach anyway. You know, and then he tried to walk it back, but that's the truth. That's the only reason that Steve Nash got this job. So would they bring in somebody else who would be more, quote-unquote, coachy? Would Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving actually respond to, I don't know, a Jeff Van Gundy? I don't think they would respond to a Tom Thibodeau. They don't want that kind of coach.
But both of them are cerebral basketball people. They're smart people. And if I can see it and you can see it and Peter can see it and the world can see it, we're going to have Alan Hahn later, and he was tweeting about it. And it's stopping them from winning the championship. Won't they wake up and say, okay, we're going to have to find somebody that's a little bit better at it, right? I mean, no offense to Steve Nash. Maybe at some point he will get to the level where he is a really, really good coach. He's not at that level now. And if he's holding them back, Michael, as much as they like him, as much as they want to have their way, won't they realize that they've got to bring in somebody more experienced if it's going to cost them a first-round series?
Again, I think it depends on those two guys. I really do. I think it depends on them. And you know, will Kyrie sign an extension if they get rid of Steve Nash? And I'm not saying that they should or they shouldn't, because people that know more basketball than me have said that, you know, he's being outcoached. Who was the who was it that we had on?
Oh, Jay Williams.
Jay Williams, who said, you know, coaches around the league say his rotations are terrible. He's not doing a job. He's not making the right substitutions. There's no rhyme or reason to his offense. So, I mean, if coaches are saying that, not Michael, Don, and Peter, that does make you wonder. And I'll tell you, with a healthy Durant and a healthy Irving, they shouldn't be getting beaten like this. I'm not saying that they should roll over the Celtics, because as Peter mentioned, Celtics are pretty good. Celtics are pretty good. But yesterday was an embarrassment. Yesterday was, quite frankly, an embarrassment. You have that game, a game that you really want. You're up by 17 points. You're dominating every sense of the word. And then they came out, and they wanted it more in the second half. You know I hate that phrase, but they were sloppy. They turned the ball over. Kevin Durant turned the ball over. And if it was tennis, it would be called unforced errors. Now, he had people on him, but he's dribbling and he's switching hands, and the ball goes out of bounds. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. So I'm not quite sure what I'm seeing here. I can't even imagine Kevin Durant being shut down the way he was shut down. I've seen it happen to Kyrie. I don't even know how Kyrie's functioning. He had to come out of the game in the second quarter because it was sundown and he could finally eat. He's starving himself from sunup to sundown. So he's not physically at 100% because he has no food in him. So he scarfed down some food, came back out, but he was awful. And I can't say it's that, because he was doing the same thing the game that he scored 39 points.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's productive to being productive. And I know people are going to call, well, Hakeem Olajuwon did it. Well, Hakeem Olajuwon was a center. I'm not saying that he doesn't extend a lot of energy or expend a lot of energy, but it's a whole lot different than to beat a point guard and constantly have the ball in your hand and run up and down the floor. That's what he's doing. That's not something that Olajuwon had to do.
And you get back to KD, and our former colleague working over at Fox, Nick Wright, tweeted this out last night. Since KD stepped on the line at the end of regulation in Game 7, he's 13 of 47 from the field in the playoffs, 27%.
Wow.
Oof. Listen.
Holy crap.
I'm with you, Michael. The series is not over. I thought the Nets would win yesterday. Obviously, the Celtics had other plans. I don't think the series is over. I really wonder, though, what the hell's going on with Ben Simmons. I'm just so confused as to how it can still be said that he'll be ready for Game 4, but he's not ready now.
Well, that's a great question. You're ready for Game 4. They need you now. You're not ready. You wouldn't be ready for Saturday?
Yeah, that's the thing. See, really.
Are we playing games with each other?
And really, Game 4, right? So you can make an excuse not to play him in either scenario.
Right.
Like, if they're down 3-0, why bother? And if it's 2-1, you're down 2-1 in that pivotal Game 4, the difference of evening the series or up 3-1, you're now going to play nurse nanny to a guy who hasn't played in 18 months. I mean, does that make sense?
If they're down 3-0, I would play him.
Well, then you're just doing it for next year.
Well, I mean, I got to get him on the court.
Right.
But if he's ready to play, I play him. But I don't understand how you – so when is Game 4? Tuesday?
Something like that, because Game 3 is Saturday.
Right. So. I mean, really, if you can play on Tuesday, you can't play – they damn well need you now. They need some defense. They need somebody to put on Tatum and stop him, and Brown and stop him. If you're ready to go on Tuesday, I think you're ready to go on Saturday. But if you talk to people that follow the Sixers – if they're down 3-0, that's the perfect game for him to play. There's no pressure. If he plays on Saturday, there's pressure. They have to win Saturday. Saturday's a must-win. As close to a must-win without being a mathematical must-win. You don't come back from 3-0 unless you're the 2004 Red Sox. You just don't. So the whole Ben Simmons thing is very, very curious. Well, let's zero in Game 4. He'll be ready Game 4. Game 3, no, that's too soon.
Now, that's the thing. It's been such a long time. We're not speaking out of school to say, hey, no, we're not trying to tell anyone whether you're healthy or not. We're just questioning how could it be a huge difference considering how long he's been out?
Because wasn't it just originally the Woj tweet about this, how he's looked at practice? It looks like he could be available for Game 4. So isn't it just he's just progressing? So it almost feels like a guess then, because we might get the Game 4. Nope, not ready. Do we even know Game 4 is definitely going to happen? Or is it just a guess of how he's progressed in practice?
Well, I mean, Nash said it's going to be up to him. Very quickly, Diamond Notes brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Yankees have runners on first and third in the eighth inning with one man out. And Aaron Judge at the plate. They're down 1-0 to the Tigers, looking to sweep Detroit. It was first and third, nobody out, and Aaron Hicks popped up. So that's where we are right now. Yankees trying to get back in this, and let's see if their inability to get big hits is finally solved right now. That's Diamond Notes, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget at any of their 6 area locations. All right, let's get to you right now. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Jamal in Queens to start it off. Jamal.
Hello, Michael. How are you? Is
good.
This Michael? Michael, can you hear me? Michael, listen. Right off the bat, Michael.
Bye-bye. You sicken me. I don't want to hear it. It's the guy who says Michael 100 times.
Yeah.
Thinks he's funny. He's not.
That's not funny.
Wait, hold on. Don, did you know, Don, that we were at that level with it?
There was something going on.
You know what? If it's clever, I'm cool.
Michael.
Why would the first thing you say, can you hear me? Usually you say, can you hear me, if you don't think you're being heard. Hey, is this Michael? Can you hear me? Goodbye. Give me a break.
Hi, who am I speaking to, please?
I got news for you, Don.
Who's this?
I think we could be hearing what just happened again down the line.
That's okay.
In retrospect, that was something.
Aaron Judge walks, so his base is loaded. Tigers going to the bullpen. So that's where we are there. Let's go to D-Rock in Brooklyn. D-Rock.
Hey, gentlemen, I can't believe that first caller, because it's very difficult to get online to talk with you guys. I hear you guys have the number one show in the city. So thanks for having me on. I've called in the past before, but, you know, as I said, it's hard to get on. I'm trying to support my Nets, man, and I'm trying to keep hope alive. And this is how I look at it. Game one, we lost by a point. Game two, we're up 17. So I'm convinced we can win game three. My issue is I'm not too convinced Steve Nash can figure out how to unlock that Celtics defense. Playing bigger should help. Maybe you play LaMarcus Aldridge to kind of space the floor, get Al Horford or Daniel Theis out of that paint. That'll allow your guards to drive to the basket. I think you should play Blake Griffin, and definitely you shouldn't go out there like you did in the fourth quarter yesterday with four guards and Nick Claxton. And you have to free up Kevin Durant to basically shoot or snipe from wherever he can. You can't have him dribbling the ball and going one-on-one, because I've seen four or five defenders go at him at one time. He's been awful. He had an awful game, too. Game one, he was so-so. But this is how I look at this with the Nets. Everything that we've been through this season, all the moves that were made for Kyrie and Kevin Durant's behalf, you have to at least get these two games in Brooklyn. There's going to be a lot of nervous energy out there in game three. And if these guys aren't up to the task and they get swept, God forbid, but if these guys get swept, I think you're going to have to make some changes. Kyrie's up for a new contract. I don't know if you don't bring him back, given everything that he's put us through.
See, but one thing, Derek, if you're a fan of the Nets, that's not their call. I said this the other day. If you had truth serum into the Nets front office and ownership, you think they want Kyrie back with everything that comes with him? Really? Do you think that? Kevin Durant won't allow it to happen. Kevin Durant has been the staunchest defender of this guy that you'll ever see, ever. So you think he's just going to allow them not to sign Kyrie Irving? Then he'll want out. Let's go back to the phones.
Shall we?
Let's go to Lee in Long Island. Lee?
What's up, Michael? What's up, Don? What's up, Peter? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Lee. What do you got?
I would just want to talk about Ramadan. I know you guys bring it up earlier. I don't think it's affecting Kyrie Irving as much as you guys think it is. Also, Jaylen Brown, I think, is also Muslim, so he's also fasting for Ramadan. The thing with Kyrie, I think, is affecting him is when he gets angry on the court. Me personally, I'm Muslim, so with me, I know you get very angry and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think the other day with the fans and him, you know, putting up his finger and stuff, I think Ramadan affected him in that way. But as far as his play on the court goes, I don't think it's affecting him.
Well, it didn't affect him in the first game, Lee, right? But I want to ask you, do you fast for Ramadan?
Yes.
Do you find yourself really exhausted if you're not eating?
No, actually, I have more energy.
Okay.
When I fill myself up, I'm really tired. When I'm on an empty stomach, I feel like I have more energy. That's my personal experience.
Well, you know what? That's good enough for me, because I have no experience with it. I would just think that if you don't eat from sundown to sunup, from sunup to sundown, and you're playing an NBA game, I would think it's exhausting. But, you know, to counteract that, guys, he was great in game one.
Now, I don't know, because that was an afternoon game. Would that be different?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point, Don.
So
yeah, because you're eating, you know, you could eat at 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning before the sun comes up. Yankees didn't score, by the way.
Yeah.
They had bases loaded, one out, and Gallo tapped one back to the mound to get the force at home, and then Stanton grounded out. Stanton's in a terrible slump right now, so they're down 1-0 going to the bottom of the eighth inning. They are not able to get hits with runners in scoring position.
And listen, if you or I, Michael, decided to fast, it would probably affect us different than somebody who's used to doing it every year and is a professional athlete. You know, so I think that for the caller who's used to doing it, he might find energy. If you or I or even Peter decided to not eat for that kind of length of time, probably would affect us differently. We're not used to that. But I'm not even sure how angry he was in game one either. He's probably right. I don't think it's an excuse for him. And there's other players that have been able to do it and excel also fasting. So
let's go to Mark. I'm sorry, Pete.
I've received some even more fascinating news, Michael. You know I get exclusive information all the time.
Yeah.
Obviously, the big social media story today has been Mike Tyson fighting a man on a JetBlue flight. Everyone's been talking about this.
Mm-hmm. Fight a Jace.
Yeah, fight a Jew.
Might suggest there might have been the response.
He's a very scared man.
Might suggest that the dude was able to respond. But, you know, video has shown this guy, like, taunting Tyson before the fight happened. I've now heard the guy threw a water bottle at Mike while Mike was sitting in his seat.
You know, everybody's always going to blame the guy who's, you know, the famous person and who certainly had some issues in the past. But seeing that video, the guy behind him was looking for it. And I don't condone violence, but I don't know how Tyson held it in as long as he did.
Yeah, it seemed like he took it for a while.
Yeah, he really did.
And by the way, isn't it crazy, Don? I was thinking about this earlier when it comes to flights. Like, let's assume Tyson told the stewardess or the stewardess noticed. Stewardess tries. The guy's still being a drunken maniac. At that point, it's basically Lord of the Flies. Like, that's what makes flights a crazy space to be in. There's not always – is there always an armed guard on a flight?
No. I mean, sometimes there is. You don't
sometimes.
Know. Yeah, you don't know. The marshal.
Yeah, sometimes there's a marshal. Sometimes there's not. So, like, dude, oh, my God. No one's ever deserved a pummeling more.
And I think you made the point on social media today that – that's restraint for Mike.
Oh, yeah, he held
Mike
back.
Could probably kill him with two punches. So what Mike was doing was not even probably 25% of what he could have done.
I think he hit him a little less intensity than Will Smith hit Chris Rock.
Dear right. God, dear Triad, it was so fabulous to drop you. Also, and it's not 1972. Let's go flight attendant. What do you say?
Who said stewardess? Peter?
I did.
Animal.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I felt like Archie Bunker.
Yeah, we're not on really? Pan Am, okay?
Yeah.
Face.
No, no, she was a stewardess on TWA.
Let's take a brief timeout. We've unpacked a lot. 1-800-919-3776. We'll continue to take your phone calls. We've got a lot of other interesting things to talk about. We'll get to all of them. Alan Hahn in the 5 o'clock hour. It's Kay, LeGreco, Rosenberg, and you on 98.7 ESPN. Bye. Bye-bye. You sicken me.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Can I whine a little bit? You guys let me whine before I get back to
the
call?
You do all the time anyway.
No, hey, one more. Go ahead, Michael.
We can't Somebody's have anything hurt. Nice in Fordham, can we? We can't have anything nice. Can we? Mm. Nothing nice. Kyle Neptune, 16-16, actually win a game in the Atlantic 10 tournament. And then Jay Wright, out of the blue, decides to retire at the age of 60.
Come join the Ramily.
And who do they hire? Kyle Neptune. We can't have anything nice. Mm. I'm very depressed.
I thought about it today, Michael, and I felt bad for you, and I felt bad for Anthony because he went to Fordham. You're like, it's never going to work. It's never going to happen. Unless you make the magic like St. Peter's, like out of 1 year, just make the run, take advantage. Because anytime you do anything good, especially in New York, you're going to get gobbled up by a bigger program. You just are.
But you almost have to find that sweet spot. Like when coaches are recruiting – if they don't want one-and-done guys, you have to find that sweet spot of a player that's good enough, but not that great that they're going to go and be a one-and-done. So, I mean, you look at Davidson, right, with Bob McKillop. That's the type of guy you need, guy who's going to be very happy there. Maybe, you know, Kyle Neptune was a guy who, obviously, he was a climber. He was ready to go. He was ready to get the big job. And Villanova's a bigger job than Fordham. So I don't know how you find that sweet spot. You have to find that guy that will be there forever.
Well, that sweet spot is impossible. So what? The only other way you could do it, Michael, is to do it with the way Iona is, just hope you get a coach that's towards like the end of his career.
Right.
And then will come in and has already accomplished a lot and doesn't mind closing out his career. So maybe you get like a former, you know, a guy from New York, or maybe a former Fordham Ram that went out and won championships and went to Final Four someplace else and then decides, you know what, for my last, you know, 5 years of coaching, I'm going to go to Fordham.
That might be the way to go, because you're right, Don. You get a great assistant coach and make him your coach like you did with Kyle Neptune. He's going to win. Somebody's going to notice, and somebody's going to pay him way more money than you can and be in a better league than the Atlantic. It's sickening. Sickening. Mm. And I'm not sure that I could really blame Kyle Neptune. But 1 year, man, that's not really given a place that gave you a chance, a real run. I don't know. Yeah, I can't blame him for taking the Villanova job, but wow.
That's such a great job, though. And it just kind of fell into his lap because who thought Jay Wright was going to retire?
I didn't.
Yeah, so, I had no idea.
Let me ask you this, Andrew. If the Sixers end up losing sometime in the playoffs, so it looks like they're going to take care of Toronto in the first round, and then
Rivers leaves
and goes to the Lakers or whatever, would he be interested in taking the Sixer job, you think?
No, I think by all accounts, he's not coaching again. That he's really done. But if I were the Sixers, he would probably be my first call. But I don't think it's going to happen.
He, for some reason, maybe it's just look, but for some reason, he seems like he'd be able to make the transition. I could see it working for him in the NBA.
But how often, Peter, does somebody retire and immediately jump back? Oh, that's right, Tom Brady.
Oh, well, that does happen. Yeah.
So sad.
I think you're going to say, how often does it work for college coaches in the NBA? Because I think that's a lot more rare.
Let's go to Rich in Belleville. Rich?
What's going on, guys?
Good. How are you?
Not sure. Well, I could be better after the meltdown yesterday. Not sure if you remember, but I'm the guy who called in. I'm the Mets, Nets, and Cowboys fan, and I'm reliving the Jason Garrett error again because of and I did say error. Because of Steve Nash. And I think the world saw it yesterday. And if you don't mind, I just want to give a quick PowerPoint presentation of his flaws.
Please. I enjoyed your last call. I enjoyed your last call with the Jason Garrett comparison. So please, take the floor.
Okay. He never calls a timeout correctly, ever. He never calls it when it's needed. This guy loses every single challenge, just like Jason Garrett used to, okay? Every interview after a loss, he talks about a process. How long is this thing going to last? You have two superstars. I mean, this is just insane. And then why is he not using Aldridge? I mean, can't we use him? Can't we use Blake? I mean, it's just insane. He's just there for the ride, just like Jason Garrett was for a decade. I can't take this anymore. I think I'm going crazy, man. And I'm reliving it again with the Nets. And I can't take this anymore.
I can't blame you.
But wait, you're a Met fan, though. You have the opposite of Jason Garrett with Buck Showalter, so be happy for that.
I am happy, but it always starts out good, and we know how it ends up. So I'm being cautiously optimistic right now.
There you go.
Well, let's put it this way, Rich. The thing that I find remarkably similar, all you see from Nash, he comes out and, like, glad hands the players before a timeout. You know, just when a timeout is called. I've never seen a coach do that. He goes out and slaps everybody's hand. I mean, he really still is a player at heart.
Yeah, he has a lot of that, like, to a fault. Like, there's good stuff about it, but I agree with you. It's to a fault.
But it's too much.
But I'm sorry, and I realize, listen, the NBA is probably the one sport where you can let the stars kind of drive things. But come on, if you really want to win a championship, you gotta be able to have experience at coaching. So again, no offense to Steve, and he was a great player, and he probably was a coach on the court, but he's just too inexperienced to expect to be able to get through this, and I think it shows, and it doesn't show as much in the regular season to people like us because we don't know the game the way coaches do. But you heard Jay Wright say the coaches can see it. They understand it.
Let's go to our good buddy Spike in St. Pete. Spike.
Hey, boys. Sorry on the Fordham coach. I can't fault him, Michael. I really can't, you know. And
oh,
I'm really concerned. I'm a little concerned why Jay Wright abruptly dropped off. He reminded me of a Pat Riley, you know, handsome guy, great-looking clothes, and all the championships, and I remember him from Hofstra. But I want to make a quick comment on yesterday's game, if I may. Last year, Andrew and I talked, as we always do in the pre-pickup, and we mentioned that the two finalists last year, this is very bad for a diehard basketball fan, with Middleton and Booker both going down. Unequivocally, two key players on two teams that played for the championship in a terrific series. And as a purist, I wanted to see a rematch. But now I'm watching Golden State, and if this kid Poole can handle the pressure, You know, they could be contenders. This is good for you, Peter. You know, I think I know you well enough to know you don't want it this way. But this bodes well for Brooklyn and for Boston. And boy, did they turn up the pressure. And you can't throw the guys into the breach who play sporadically. We've talked all year about this. Kyrie's what he is. God bless him. But you can't just start playing high-powered games when you haven't played consistently for the whole year. It doesn't work that way. And if you think they're putting Ben Simmons in, I got a bridge to sell you, because that makes no sense to me. So I hope for the best, and I think Boston's in great shape. And let's give a tip of the cap to Al Horford, who played terrifically yesterday.
You know, and Spike, also, Thies played beautifully too. So everybody thought the loss of Robert Williams III and Bruce Brown opened his mouth. I think Horford, first of all, Horford knows how to win championships. Did it in college twice. The guy can play. He's a player. Is he great? No, but he's a real player. And I think he had a great game before fouling out yesterday. A great game. And he's one of the people that's banging up against Kevin Durant. They're doing their job. They're beautifully coached. And Peter, you know, didn't kick in until halfway through the season. It's a new way of doing things. They want to share the basketball. They don't want one-on-one, which is what the Nets play. They move it around the perimeter, and they get the open shot. It finally sunk in at the halfway point. And they're great. They're a great team to watch.
And it cures them of the problem of not having a pure point guard.
Right.
You know, because Marcus Smart's not a pure point guard, right? But Michael, to your point, the way they swing the ball, it doesn't really matter who brings it up. They could be dangerous. They could be dangerous. I mean, and guys, you're able to see it now clear in this situation. I mean, Jason Tatum's just, he's the real deal. They have a real superstar with Tatum.
Let me tell you what's going on with the Yankees right now. Okay? 3-0 Detroit. They just scored in the bottom of the eighth inning. They had the bases loaded, nobody out. So they got a double play grounder back to Litke. So that put runners on second and third with two outs. And Miguel Cabrera coming up. He was 0-for-3, and he's one hit away from 3,000. And Boone did the only thing that he could do. He walked him. He intentionally walked him. Crowd goes nuts. Nuts. Next guy gets a two-run single, a boop single, and Cabrera doesn't get his 3,000th hit. So Boone is going to be, I mean, enemy number one in Detroit, that's for sure. And the Tigers' Twitter account tweeted out, LOL.
I mean, listen, he did the right thing. You can't worry about history.
You're not giving the guy a what? Yeah. He wasn't doing it to spite him.
No, not at all. He did the right move. Now, Austin Meadows made it backfire by getting the blooper. But the only time I could ever remember somebody not doing that, and it's the last guy that I could remember ever, that I would ever expect not to play the game to win, the move in Jeter's last game at Yankee Stadium was to intentionally walk him. You know that, Don.
Right.
And Buck decided not to. He didn't want to be that guy, and then Jeter got the game-winning hit. 9,999 times out of 10,000, Showalter would walk Jeter there. Not in the last game at Yankee Stadium. The Orioles weren't playing for anything. The Yankees were out of
That's
it.
Right.
So he decided to play, you know, pitch to him.
And if the situation was similar here, they would have let Cabrera hit. But I'm sorry, this game's still meaningful.
Yeah.
It was a 1-0 game. You can't do it. It was 10-0, different story. But, you know, you still got to win the game.
Andrew, I'd like to ask you something, if you don't mind, if you could join the fray with us for a moment. What is your little show like, Spike? What kind of show is it that we get before we get Spike? Because it sounds like you're doing a show with Spike.
We talk a lot of basketball.
Uh-huh.
Spike is driving the show.
Okay.
I could definitively say that.
Right.
And he takes us all over the place. We hit a little bit on the Sixers.
Right.
And Embiid shot last night. We did a little bit on Jay Wright.
Uh-huh.
He talked about the Celtics defense. It was very NBA intensive. And I'm sorry more people can't hear it. It's
any,
a really fun show.
Any sponsors or anything like that?
Not yet. We're working on it. We have some sponsors in the mix.
Interesting.
That are being spoken to, but nothing as of yet, no.
You know, I don't think it would be a bad idea to have the Andrew and Spike podcast.
All right. Yeah, maybe it's better in podcast form.
Or maybe it's better in the way it is now.
Okay.
Audience of one?
Well, you don't know.
It's beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. Let's take a brief timeout. I love to eavesdrop on that show. Yankees batting in the ninth inning, trying to come back. Mets are leading their game, trying to take 3 out of 4 from the Giants. We'll break down the baseball when they're both over, but we're taking your phone calls on the Nets and their disappointing loss to the Celtics, down 2-0 in the best of seven. So a lot of stuff to do. Alan Hahn in the 5 o'clock hour. Kay LaGreca Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
The Nets were up by 17 in the second quarter, and then it fell apart. I don't know if I've ever seen Durant have a worse game. They have three guys on him. They're making him uncomfortable, and I think that the head coach of the Celtics, who spent a year on the bench with the Nets, knows how to defend this guy, and they are really executing the game plan perfectly. If Kevin Durant's not going to be able to go off, but both he and Kyrie were non-existent yesterday.
I don't remember the last time I've seen two stars like Kyrie and KD blanketed in that way in the second half. You got the impression, Michael, even while the Nets were still up 4 or 5 points, they were not going to be able to hold on because nothing was working with Kyrie and KD.
The Michael K. Show.
It's April 21st, 2021.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Ah, keep getting the years wrong. Welcome back to the show, everybody. The two baseball teams, they have finished. The Mets victorious, the Yankees not. And we go to today's Diamond Notes brought to you by Nissan. You know, we talk a lot about the Yankees. And Donna and Peter, it's not fair. The Mets are off to a great start. Now, the naysayers will say they always get off to a great start. Well, they do. And then they hit the skids. It's a little bit different this year. It's a little bit different. They've got good pitching. They've got a great manager. And the players they brought in, guys like Escobar and Canna and Marte, they can play, man. They can play, and they brought in a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer in Max Scherzer. So maybe this year it's different, Don. Maybe this year it doesn't fall apart. This is a good team with a manager who knows how to squeeze every last ounce of a team. So he didn't manage yesterday's game because of a procedure that he had. He managed today, and they win 6-2, and they take 3 out of 4 from a really good Giants team.
A really good Giants team. So I don't want to hear, oh, they haven't played anybody. You know, the Phillies are still somebody you have to contend with in their division. All right, I understand the Diamondbacks and the Nationals aren't very good, but this Giants team was hot. They both came in with the best records in baseball, and the Mets took 3 out of 4, including sweeping a doubleheader. And last night, Michael, they lost 5-2, but if you watch that game, they had a bunch of opportunities late, and it took a great play by Flores to stop a couple of runs from scoring. I believe it was in the eighth inning, and then the ninth inning, they were still able to get a couple of runners on and make it interesting. They made San Francisco earn that 5-2 victory, and then they bounce right back at 12 hits today, get home runs from Escobar and Lindor. Lindor is really hot. If Lindor is going to be this good, you know, then you show that last year was just an aberration, and he's going to be the star that they thought they signed to a 10-year contract. Carrasco's got a 1.47 earned run average. Scherzer looked great last night.
He retired 18 in a row today, Carrasco.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He's great, and Scherzer was great a couple of nights ago. Also very cold and yet still was able to perform well. Jankowski's been great defensively, had another couple of hits today and a run scored. This is such a fun team. Or he actually went 0-for-3 but did have a run scored. But he's been good. It's got a different feel to it because of Buck. And it's got a different feel because the guys that they brought in here are all performing. And if they can – if I said keep their head above water until DeGrom comes back. I mean, they're doing that so far. And we'll see if DeGrom comes back, when DeGrom comes back. But if he can, you know, now we're talking about adding a Cy Young Award winner to also already what's been the best rotation in baseball. So this has been fun to watch.
4 consecutive series won to open the season. They're 10-4. Next game is at Arizona tomorrow at 9:40 p.m. as they start a road trip. So all good news for the Mets. There's not much other than, you know, obviously the shutdown of DeGrom. It's going to be at least 2 months, and we'll see when he gets the MRI whether or not there's any healing there. But it's good news because even the people that have taken over him, McGill's been great. I mean, he even struggled the other day but persevered, and the Mets got the win. Carrasco's been outstanding. Scherzer is 3-0. I think with a 2.50 ERA, all good things. Bassett's pitched well. So, yeah. Mets
fans
getting
a little
excited
shaky.
Now.
Last night was shaky for him, giving up 3 runs in the first inning, but they only allowed 2 more runs the rest of the way. And here's the thing. I don't care what sport it is. run differential, goal differential, point differential. That really kind of tells you how good a team you are. Michael, they're in first place by four games over Atlanta and Washington, and they're the only team in the division with a plus run differential, a plus 30, which is the second best in the National League. So they're hitting, pitching, and then just looking at quickly, Peter, I'm sorry, it's the second best in baseball.
Well, and Don, how about this? They're also hitting the ball with two outs. Second best, I think, in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing a lot of things well. I mean, we're a couple of weeks away, guys, let's just be real, before this momentum and this bandwagon is fully flying.
I would like to get the attention, the attendance today, because it's a day game, and, you know, April, school's obviously still open. I think maybe some kids are on still an Easter break or whatever, but that was a really good crowd. You're going to start to see people believing in this team. They've got stars, and they've got a manager. That's the difference, Michael. I've been saying it. I really just such a good manager. He really is. Even the way he Marte had a really bad stolen base attempt last night. Down three runs, runners at the corners, two outs. He tries to steal a base to get in scoring position, gets thrown out. Ridiculous. And he said after the game, hey, I got a green light. I'm aggressive. And then Buck was asked about it today because he didn't manage yesterday because of the surgery. And Buck says, hey, he's got the green light. I love his aggressiveness. I don't want to tell players not to be aggressive. He's going to do what he's going to do, but it's never going to happen again. So he was able to compliment the player softly, but then mentioned that in that situation, he's not going to do that again. So do what you do, but in that situation, if we're presented with that and the tying runs at the plate, then don't try to throw us out. Don't run ourselves out of an inning. So he got his point across without killing the player.
Attendance for today's Mets game, 28,760.
Listen, the Giants are a draw, and I do think some kids are off because of the Easter holiday. I know Declan had off. Are the kids off for you?
My kids are, yep.
Yeah, so that's certainly going to help. But, Michael, you get – and it was a nice day, but, day games, getaway, but to get that, you're going to start to people really gravitate to this team. And quite frankly, Michael, they're entertaining. They are, and right now the Yankees aren't. I'm not talking about wins and losses. I'm just talking about, the situational hitting, as Peter said. Mets are hitting their share of home runs, too. They're right there among the leaders in home runs, but they're also the leaders in stolen base. So they're making things happen across the board right now
also,
for the first 12 games.
We also really – you mentioned it, Don, but I think it bears repeating how big a deal it is that Lindor is playing this well. I mean, that was really one of the worst things about last season – was that you made a deal, a really expensive deal, for a guy who looked for last season to not be the player you traded for, that you signed. And now he is playing to the back of his baseball card. They have a superstar again. He didn't exist last year in this form.
Now the Yankees lose 3-0 to the Tigers. They do take 2 out of 3, so they go 3-3 on the 6-game road trip. They lose 2 out of 3 to Baltimore, and then they win 2 out of 3 against the Tigers, but you can't get that complacent about the 2 out of 3 for the Tigers. The Tigers gave those games away. I mean, the difference in the first game was a drop pop-up off the bat of Josh Donaldson that scored 2 runs in the first inning. So, I mean, that's not exactly pounding the ball. The Yankees, in their first 13 games, and they are 7-6, so if the Toronto Blue Jays hold on against the Red Sox right now, they're a 3-0 bottom of the 8th at Fenway. The Blue Jays would be 8-5. The Yankees are 7-6. They'd be one game ahead of the Yankees. No one has run away with it. But the Yankees have scored 39 runs in the first 13 games. That's 3 runs a game. Tied for 26th in Major League Baseball. Tied for second worst in the American League. They've been shut out 3 times this season. The Diamondbacks and the Twins also shut out 3 times for the most in Major League Baseball. And I mentioned this right at the start of the show. This team is built to hit home runs, to win when they hit home runs. And Jeff Passan had a long, detailed story yesterday or the day before on ESPN.com. Home runs are down around baseball. No one is hitting the ball out, and they think either A, the ball is deadened, or B, there's now a humidifier that has to be in every single ballpark. So all the balls are equal in every place that you play. And then you put in the cold weather, but he also went back and said, cold weather does knock down home runs, but never so much that there's an incremental increase where it gets back to normal. This is going to be a year where home runs are down. And if the Yankees can't hit home runs, guys, they're not going to win the games they have to win, because they don't have a lineup that's able to generate four hits in an inning. They've got to hit home runs. And if they simply can't do it, then Houston, we have a problem.
And we've had this conversation before, even going back to the late 80s when there was the allegations of the juiced ball. It always kind of seems to come back around again, right? Where all of a sudden home runs are down. It's not as easy to hit home runs, humidifiers and all. So why are we building a team around solely home runs, Michael, when it just seems like every other year they end up being down? You got to find other ways to score. You know, and I know that even with the home runs being down, there's going to be a lot of home runs hit. I mean, because that's the way most teams are built, to hit home runs. You know, like I said, the Mets are among the leaders. San Francisco led the league last year in home runs, and they had 107. So they're not going away. But that also is not an excuse, Michael, to not find ways to score when you're not hitting home runs. And listen, they went 3-3 on the road, and you want to play 500. But when you're playing six games against the Orioles and Tigers, Michael, you expect better than that. And they scored 15 runs in six games. If I got that right, 15, that's not – that's against Baltimore and Detroit.
And the big outburst was after the rain delay in Baltimore. That was the most runs they scored. So it has not been good.
Right.
But the one thing I would throw out as a life preserver to Yankee fans that are very angry right now, they're 7-6, they're a game out of first place. No one's running away with anything. No one is running away with anything.
That's a glass half full, but the glass half empty is that the Yankees really could be taking advantage of the less than great starts from the Blue Jays and the Red Sox and the Rays, where maybe if they got off to the start that they could have a 3 or 4 game lead like the Mets do, right? The Mets are taking advantage of their division struggling. The Braves are under 500, Phillies under 500. So the Mets have been able to take advantage of that. So, yeah, the positive is nobody's running away with it, but this could have been an opportunity for the Yankees to have a 2 or 3 game lead on these teams.
Well, those are today's Diamond Notes brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store on NissanUSA.com. Let's start off with Jason in New Jersey. Jason, talk to us, baby.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call, as always. So I'm a Yankee fan, but I'm going to talk about the Mets. I watch a ton of the games because my roommate's a big Mets fan. And I'll tell you, this lineup is deep, athletic. They got players that aren't big household names, but are good players around baseball, like Eduardo Escobar. Guy's hit 35 and 100. He's been an all-star. Starling Marte, 290 hitter. Chris Bassett, who's a top 20 pitcher in the sport. Like, their one issue is that their bullpen's a little weak, and I'm sure they're going to address it during the trade deadline. But this is not the same old Mets. This is a team that's deep. They have a great manager at Athletic, and if they stay healthy and everything, and DeGrom comes back, this team's going to be dangerous all season.
Yeah, you know what, Jason, I'm going to tell you something else. Even if DeGrom doesn't come back, they're going to be dangerous. They're going to be dangerous. They're that good. And I said this at the beginning of the year, Don, the thing I'm concerned about with the Mets would be their bullpen, but they've pitched around it, and they've got some arms out there. And I think there's a difference with Steve Cohen rather than a Wilpon owning the team, because when push comes to shove and people are trying to get rid of, you know, relievers that make a lot of money, the Mets could dive in. They can dive in.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing, is that they'll find pitchers if they need it. If they find out that Grom's not coming back, they can get another starter if they want, although that doesn't seem to be an issue right now. You can always find bullpen help. And you know what also helps, Michael? Carrasco going 7 2/3 today.
Yeah.
where they didn't have to tax the bullpen. That McGill, even though he really didn't have it, still pitched 6 innings the other day. And Scherzer gave you 7, even though he was laboring in the 6th and the 7th. That's big.
I've just received the ultimate head scratching compliment, guys.
Okay.
Norberto Pena just tweeted out, "Michael K is a Mets boy. I've never heard Michael so excited about the Mets."
Wow, I think that is a compliment for you. Because people call you Yankee boys.
That How am I a Yankees boy?
That means you're really even Steven.
I am even Steven.
No, there are people that for whatever reason think this is, you know, the Yankee show that dabbles in other subjects.
But not true.
Not true. It's not even
true.
Close to true.
Simon in New Haven.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, terrible. I don't know what's going on with Boone. This is ridiculous, man. I mean, Jordan Montgomery pitches great. Nestor Cortez pitches great, and nothing to show for it. I mean, what is going on? We don't need a hitting coach. We need ping pong paddles, ground out, pop up. I mean, Gallo is getting like Gardner. Jeez, Alou.
But why are you blaming Aaron Boone?
Well, because, I know he does his best, but it seems like it's the same record, the same excuse. Oh, it sucks to lose. It's frustrating. So-and-so should have had a good, shouldn't have been this way.
Well, but Simon, I'm just curious. What do you want him to say?
Well, I want him to, what he should be doing is he should take these Yankee hitters into his office and say, look, guys, I don't know what goes on, what he does. This is my opinion. But I think he needs to, when they have a bad game like they've been having, they go into the office, Boone should say, look, guys, you got to stop hitting like this. You got to do better. That's all. Oh, give some
Simon,
constructive
Simon.
Criticism.
Wow. That's deep. That's deep. You're quite the leader. Because I'm sure that's what I'm sure that he hasn't told them, you guys have to start hitting. Yeah, I'm sure they don't know they have to start hitting. Baseball. I'm sure Joey Gallo doesn't realize I've got to, hit a ball into the seats if I'm going to hit 120. I'm sure Aaron Judge is saying, I should have more than one home run. I'm sure that Giancarlo Stanton is saying, one for my last 20 is not quite good. I don't think the manager really has to illuminate that for them.
This is not football. In football, if the quarterback throws an awful pass, or if the running back hits the wrong hole or doesn't know the play or fumbles the ball away, you can maybe, take him aside and rip into him. That's not – what are you going to take Rizzo aside and say, how dare you ground out to the pitcher with the bases loaded? What's the matter with you? You think a player is going to respond to that? It's the hardest thing to do in sports. Success is 75% of the time you're going to fail. There was only – And for Rizzo's batting average, there's like a 75% chance he's going to fail in that situation. And you're going to rip him when he does fail? Now, you'll have meetings and you'll talk to the hitting coach and all that, go over strategy. But baseball's not like other sports. It's certainly not like football.
Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of the writer Joe Posnanski.
Oh, sure.
He's brilliant. And his Baseball 100 book is one of the best books I've ever read. And it's a thick book. It's like 700 pages, and it's just riveting. Okay? So on his Twitter feed, for those that just tuned in, eighth inning, Yankees are down 1-0. Second and third, two men out, Miguel Cabrera coming to the plate at 2,999 hits. So one hit away from 3,000. He'd be the seventh player to have 3,000 or more hits and 500 or more home runs in baseball history. Now, this isn't the last game. This is not the last game he's ever going to play.
No.
But this is his last at bat. And he's got a weekend series in Detroit.
Okay.
So they've got the lefty Litke on the mound. They've got Austin Meadows, a lefty batter, on deck. And they intentionally walk Miguel Cabrera. And the crowd goes nuts and they're booing. And I understand why they're booing. They want to see some history, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's what Joe Posnanski tweets out. I didn't need another reason to hate the Yankees, but like always, they gave me one. Here's my problem with what happened at the Yankee game. Nobody, and I mean nobody, is looking out for the fans. You have Dave Roberts pulling Kershaw with a perfect game. You have Aaron Boone intentionally walking Miggy with 3,000 hits on the line for a tiny strategic edge. It just stinks. The game is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be for the fans. And in baseball, seems like nobody, and I mean nobody, thinks about that at all. Joe, you think that's Aaron Boone's concern? We're trying to win the game. So even if you say, for a tiny strategic edge, well, that's enough of an edge to do it. Aaron Boone is not the cheerleader for baseball. His job is to win games. That was the absolute right move to make, even if it's a tiny strategic edge. Imagine if he had the lefty, Litke, face a righty Cabrera, who got a two-run single right there. People be going nuts. That's what I keep saying, Don and Peter and everybody listening. The people that run baseball are at loggerheads with making it entertaining for fans. Their job is to win. If it's boring the way they win, they don't care. It's not to make it exciting. So if you somehow incentivize those that build teams and those that manage teams to make it more exciting rather than win, then you might have something there. But to criticize a guy because he got a tiny strategic edge, well, as long as you're admitting it's a tiny strategic edge, then he had to do it.
I mean, it's not that tiny, by the way. It's a pretty basic. So it was a standard issue move that everyone does there. So, but Michael, you're also sort of making the guy's point. He's saying, who cares about the fans? You're saying, yes, there is a sort of like chasm between what's good for the fans and what's good for the teams.
Yeah.
Like you're disagreeing with him blaming Boone, but you're not disagreeing with the idea that there are times where fun is lost at the expense of winning.
Absolutely. True. And I've been trumpeting that, and I don't blame the front office for building a team that's boring if they think that's the best way to win. It's not their job to build an exciting team that might win.
But this is where he loses me, because in any sport, a similar thing would have happened. All right? Let's say Ovechkin can break Gretzky's record, and there's a minute and a half to go at the Garden, and the Rangers are up 2-1, or they're down 2-1. But there's a minute and a half to go. They've got the net empty. Ovechkin's heading towards the empty net. Should the Rangers not skate back and try to stop him, or go, you know what, he's got a chance to break Gretzky's record, so let's give up the minute and a half of possibly winning the game and just let him skate the length of the ice and put it into the empty net? No, they're going to try to stop him from scoring the empty net because they want to keep it 2-1 to try to win the game. That wouldn't be bad for hockey. That's the way it goes. Basketball, the same thing. Football, the same thing. Emmitt Smith's about to break the record on a 4th-and-1. Am I supposed to let him get the first down in a game that's still undecided so he can break Jim Brown's record? Of course not. You defend it.
Yeah, I don't get it.
That's ridiculous.
This is what Boone said about walking him. Look, it's a baseball call all the way, but there's no doubt a little more feeling to it, understanding the situation. But in the end, you've got to go with what you think is right within the context of the game, of course.
And if they pitch to him and Cabrera laces a 2-run single, Yankee fans are going to go nuts, and rightly so. Now, you look back at it, they got shut out. The next hitter got a base hit anyway, so they still ended up scoring and tacking on runs and winning the game 3-0. But in that particular moment, Michael, how much would Yankee fans kill Boone for pitching to Cabrera?
Kill him. They'd be calling for him.
And rightly so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have such respect for Joe, but to criticize Aaron Boone and say you hate the Yankees because they did the right thing, Joe? They did the right thing. They did the only thing. So a guy should, if you're Aaron Boone, you should pitch to Cabrera just for the good of the game and get yourself fired. Does that make sense? I don't think it does. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number. We'll come back, take more of your phone calls. A lot of angry people out there. We'll talk to you all right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
We got to talk, Don and Peter, about the Mets having Lindor as a DH today.
Yeah.
So smart, because that is really a day off from his feet playing shortstop, which is a very tough position to play. But you keep his bat, which is hot, in the lineup. Rather than giving him a full day off, you're giving him a half a day off, and he could still swing the bat. And I think that's a really smart way to employ the DH. I think that's why it's important not to have one person locked into your DH spot for the whole year, like what the Nationals have with Nelson Cruz. You've got to have a guy that could play other positions so the DH could be used as a half day off.
No, it's a great way to use it. And also, I want to try to get the exact number, Michael, but he was like hitting over 400 in his career DHing. Now, he didn't have a ton. There was only maybe a dozen games in which he did it in Cleveland, or maybe he did it, you know, a little bit, I don't know, maybe last year, I guess, in interleague play. But still, he's a tremendous hitter with the DH, and that's great. Yeah, because a normal situation, day game after a night game, Michael, Lindor wouldn't be in the lineup today.
Right, and then he's also used the DH very well with Alonso. And he's kind of, you know, he's told Alonso, you're my starting first baseman. But, Don, take a look at Alonso's numbers as a DH. He might not like it, but he might be suited for it.
No, absolutely. There's no question. So, and then he's going to need the days. And there's a lot of guys that are just going to need over a long season. So, yeah, well, I don't want to take Lindor's bat out of the lineup.
Well, that's today's starting lineup maneuver. And it is brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now, get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store at NissanUSA.com. Let's go back to the phone calls. Let's go to Cullum in the Bronx. Cullum.
What's going on, Michael, Don, and Peter? How we doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good. I mean, disappointed with the Yankees, but like the lack of offense is aggravating as a fan. And they're right now, they're the 24th in runs. And the pitching has been absolutely phenomenal in the first 12 games. And then, obviously, they should be a 9, a 10-win team if they were in middle-of-the-road offensive team to start. That's obviously going to change. The pitching is not going to be phenomenal this good for the rest of the season. Now, they, as a team, as an organization, they gave us and sold us last year that, all right-handed lineup is will work. And they proved to us, without saying it, that their idea was a failure because they went out and they got Rizzo and Gallo. They realized what they were doing was wrong and they had to change it. Why not now what they're doing and how they're building an offense and how they want to run this team is wrong?
Well, I don't think they think that after 13 games. I mean, you could say last year they didn't score either, but they did change it up. It's a different lineup. You have Rizzo and Gallo the entire year. You have Donaldson. You have Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. So you've changed. But I don't think they're going to say that they're a failure after 13 games. I just don't see them doing it.
No, but I think he made an excellent point. You know, last year, why he's so right-handed, doesn't matter. They're spray hitters. They should be able to hit home runs from everywhere in the park. Look at Judge. He doesn't pull all of his home runs. You know, and what did they do late in the year? Went out and got two lefties. So isn't that kind of admitting, I guess we were wrong?
Yeah.
Or is it saying the guys are not doing what they're supposed to be doing?
No, I think they admitted they were wrong because I think they look at a pitching term like tunneling and lanes, and when you have 9 right-handed batters, it makes it easy for a pitcher to not have to think about that left-hander that keeps coming up every 2 batters. You could just go in the same lane, the same delivery release point, and they realized that that played to their disadvantage, even though their right-handed hitters could reach the right field seats and made it easier for pitchers.
And that's why that the plus-minus and run differential is so big, Michael, because this pitching has been spectacular, and they're +1 in run differential.
Right.
That just shows you how they're flat-out not scoring runs. Going into today, by the way, as a DH, .429 hitter, Lindor.
Amazing, right?
Yeah, really just I take it back. .447 with 6 home runs and 12 RBIs in 11 games and 48 at bats. And
Lucas,
add to that today.
Lucas Litke was the guy who intentionally walked Cabrera after being told by Boone to do it. And he said he fully assumed he'd be walking him intentionally before Aaron Boone even made the call. And Litke came on to say, "We're trying to win a game. As great as it is to see 3,000, we're not concerned with that as much as they are."
Honestly, other than the booing, which I understand because you're just disappointed if you're a fan, I'm really shocked it's this much of a thing. I wouldn't even ask about it. It's a no-brainer. And as Peter said, slight statistical. When would you ever pitch to a Cabrera who just came off a 3-hit performance the night before? Why would you pitch to him with an open base?
Tiger manager A.J. Hinch said, quote, he had zero doubt Cabrera was getting walked. He went on to say, "Booney's obligation is to his own team and their chances of winning. He had the matchup behind Miggy that he wanted, so you could see it coming. I know our fans responded accordingly, but I totally get it."
Right. Let me ask you this, Michael. Let's say the game is 10-0, and it's the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth. 2 outs, nobody on. And Cabrera's on deck. Are the Yankees supposed to walk the batter so Cabrera gets a chance to hit for the fans?
You're right.
No. I mean, you play baseball. I mean, part of these things are all nice under the right circumstances. You know, you don't want to see you manipulate the game to make it happen. And as you said, listen, it's disappointing for the fans who came to that particular game, but they probably had the tickets before anyway, and who knew he was going to get 3 hits the night before? And they're here this weekend, so he's got all weekend to get it done at home. But even if they were going on the road, I still wouldn't have pitched to him.
Of course. It's the only move. He's got to worry about the Yankees winning the game, not about Miguel Cabrera making history. Hey, he had 3 other at-bats before that to get a hit. He didn't get one.
Almost had a homer to do.
Yeah,
We've seen that before.
Let's go to I'll give you a little quick quiz. Give me the three players that have hit home runs for their 3,000th hit.
Well, I can give you Jeter and Boggs.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the other.
Yes, you can. You're insulting me that you're not thinking.
Oh, why would you do that to me, Peter? I got two out of the three. He's killing me. The other one that got
but the other one's more memorable.
More memorable than Jeter?
And that's what he's sounding like.
No. It's just
as
something
memorable.
He should know.
Okay.
I should know.
Something you yeah. should know.
So you're trying to say it was a Met that did it?
No, I'm not saying that. There's never been a Met that has 3,000.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So there was that. So, but why is it so? Was it recent?
Within the last 8 years, maybe.
Within the last 8 years.
In New York.
It was done here in New York.
But it was done against the Mets or Yankees, I guess. But I'm drawing a blank. I'm sorry.
A-Rod. Alex Rodriguez was a baseball player. He knew how to play baseball.
Off of Justin Verlander.
I'm sorry, Alex. I thought I did a pretty good job getting the Boggs. But I don't get credit for that because I didn't remember A-Rod. I'm sorry. Alex forgives me.
This is interesting. I just saw this on NewYorkPost.com. So the sixth inning of today's game between the Mets and the Giants, SNY goes to a highlight, right? And right. Sal Licata, it's called the game break on SNY. And one of the game breaks that he showed was Yankee highlights. Gary Cohen thought he was muted back at Citi Field. And he said, why are we showing Yankee highlights? What do you think?
That's a bad job out of Gary. Why wouldn't you show Yankee highlights?
Well, to
defend Gary, okay? I'll defend Gary here. Yankees are on opposite you. Now, you're alerting everyone to the fact that the Yankees are on right now, and it's a close game. You might be losing some viewers because the Met game, I wouldn't say it was a blowout, but it seemed like it was at hand. So I get what Gary's saying.
But it's SNY. I mean, I think SNY has done a very good job of being well-rounded, not just about the Mets. It's a day game. I watched the game. They were showing highlights all around day baseball. If something happened in the Yankee game, why should they be excluded? I think that'd be a poor job. Well, let's not show Yankee highlights. I mean, Peter, tonight... I mean, I'm not going to do it tonight because there's way more important games and the Devils are out of it. But usually in a normal set of circumstances, when I'm giving the out-of-town scoreboard, the first score I'll give is one of the other locals. Because I just figure that's kind of the symmetry. It's a Ranger game and, you know, give a Devil or Islander. But but the Carolina game and the Pittsburgh game means more to the Rangers standings and the Devils Sabres doesn't mean anything. So I won't do it tonight. But I don't stop from giving the score. What if in the postgame show I'm mentioning that the Islanders are in overtime? Is that by doing the wrong thing that people might turn off the postgame and go flip on the Islander game?
No, because the postgame is you're giving scores from around the league too. But I guess, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to call Gary Metboy. Only I get that kind of treatment. Yeah. But I understand what he's saying though. But you're right. It makes SNY look better that they go, okay, we'll show the Yankee highlight. We think our fan base is still going to stay with our game.
Yeah.
And by the way, welcome to Yes. They have rejoined us
but
after the Yankee post.
I'll give you a better example.
Okay.
This year we have a sponsor that wants the play-by-play guy during the Ranger game. It's very difficult, but we try to find a way to do it, of giving the out-of-town scoreboard.
Okay.
So that's during the game. So if the Islanders or Devils are in overtime and the Rangers are up 6-0, should I not give that score because people might flip over to the more competitive game? Or is that complete insanity and just do what normal people do? How about that?
So you're saying that Gary's wrong?
I think Gary. No, I'm going to be. Listen, I'm a big fan of Gary. He's terrific. He was Met boy. That if I had to guess, that's Gary saying I'm a Met guy. Met broadcast. Why are we showing Yankee highlights? I would bet $1 million that was the reason. Not because he thought people are going to tune out. He's thinking Met broadcast, Met network. Why are we showing Yankee highlights? Absolutely guaranteed.
Wow, that's a take.
Am I wrong?
I don't know, because to me that seems like so silly.
And I'm not even going to kill Gary for it.
Michael,
because Gary's got the luxury of being Met boy. He grew up a Met fan. He does Met play-by-play and doesn't have to be neutral because he doesn't do a talk show.
It's a great point. You're right. There is no downside.
Now, I don't think that he wanted that to go over the air. He didn't say it during the broadcast.
he thought his mic was down. So is it okay for him to feel that way and mutter it where it was heard? I got no problem with Gary. I got a problem with the producer exposing him like that. They got to turn the mic down.
I'll tell you what, for all aspiring young broadcasters, and I hope it doesn't happen to me. It hasn't happened in 31 years, but it could. I think it happened once, but I didn't say anything really untoward. Just, you got, if you have a mic near your face, you have to really believe that it's on. Even if it's not. Number one, there could be somebody in the truck that hates your guts and would like nothing better than expose you. Number two, there are technical snafus where they think they've turned down the mic and it's not. Happen. Don't say anything when you have a mic near your face.
And happened to Howie Rose.
Yeah.
And in this era, more than anywhere, a lot of people are doing stuff from home. They're not in the room with a producer who can give them a look. You got to be really careful.
Yes.
No, always assume the mic is hot. Not, but again, Gary's playing to the room. Anyone that heard that during the broadcast or Met fans that don't care probably were asking the same thing. I'm sure Gary didn't appreciate it that it made the air, but I'm not going to kill him. But if Michael had done that, Michael, forget about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, dear God.
You'd be written
heaven.
Met fans would be waiting to lynch me.
You'd be written about in three papers.
And they might start another paper just to write about me.
But let's listen. I always lift the skirt. I had to, you know.
Lift it up and show it to
me. Get a call back. That you think, and I don't want to mention any names because you guys all know who they are. There are plenty of announcers in New York that are calling games for the team that they rooted for.
Me,
you don't
Gary.
Think they love the teams that they call the games for and want to do well, but they don't have a talk show where they have to be neutral, so they're allowed to be that way. So Michael's got to shut off what Sam Rosen, diehard Ranger fan his whole life. He loves doing Ranger games. He's a Ranger guy. Gary's a Met guy. Who else am I forgetting?
Papa's a Giant guy. Really?
I'm not going to say.
I know he's a big Yankee guy. Usually when you're a Yankee guy, you're a Giant guy.
What about the Wheeze?
I always thought he was a Giant fan, but he told me he grew up a Jet fan. So maybe he scrubbed his brain clean from when he grew up or whatever, but he might have been a Jet fan. I always thought he was a Giant fan.
What about with shoes?
I thought that's who you were talking about.
No, I was talking about Papa.
He said Papa.
No, but Papa, then you said something, Peter.
Oh, you were responding to me saying the Wheeze. I thought you were still talking Papa.
Who did you said the Wheeze?
Yeah, and I did mean Weasel Shoes.
Yeah, so, but he said he was a Jet fan, so he's a Jet fan. But the point is that if you don't have a talk show, and I'm not saying you got to be unabashed, but you don't think they're happy the team's winning?
You want to know something crazy?
And then it's okay, but if they take a talk show somewhere, now they've got to completely change who they are.
How am I a Jet fanboy?
Now, you want to know something crazy, Michael?
What's that?
Chris Carlin.
Uh-huh.
Secretly a huge Michigan State Spartan guy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, hates the Scarlet Knights. Hates them.
That's not good.
Now, again, I shouldn't say it. The Papa thing, I take it back. Diehard Giant fan is all I.
So the only time I ever got caught, this was about 10 years ago. So in Toronto, the visiting television booth is right next to, like, the best suite on the suite level at Rogers Center. And the only thing between the two suites, or the broadcast suite and the fan suite, is a piece of glass. And there was a woman that had practically no clothes on that was in the suite. And I just nudged Kenny, didn't say anything. I said, look at that. And this is during a commercial. We're off the air. And Kenny goes, oh, yeah. Look out, right? And I start laughing, and Mushnick picked it up and wrote about it. And the reason why that game was being carried by a lot of our affiliates in the upstate area, so they didn't have commercials sold. So they just ran a picture of the field with the mics live.
Wow. I mean,
imagine the stuff that we could have said.
All we did, I
was pointing out a woman that didn't have much clothes on.
When I worked at Sports Phone, Michael will remember this. We had satellite, but not the satellite DirecTV. Like
satellite.
It was big, big satellite dishes on the roof, and you just have to put like T1, and you would see the satellite moving on. So we would get raw feeds of games around the country, And the things that you'd see during commercial breaks, guys, were ridiculous. The cameraman looking through the crowd trying to find, like, gorgeous women and zooming in, and the announcer's going, ho, ho. And we saw that and laughed, but that's kind of what went on back, you know, 30 years ago. And now you can't because everybody, a lot of people have access. But before anybody really had access to that, that all went on.
I mean, look what happened to Tom Brenneman. I mean, what he said was reprehensible, but he thought he was off the air. So either somebody in the truck really doesn't like Tom Brenneman, mm-hmm. and they kept the mic open, but what he said got him fired. He might not ever recover from that.
That's true.
I mean, I saw a story the other day. He's doing high school games in Cincinnati. It's the only work he can get.
Come on.
Yeah. This guy was calling, like, playoff games for Fox in football and baseball. So whenever there's a mic in front of you, kids, it's
be
live.
Careful.
We'll be right back. Take more of your phone calls right on this live mic right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
The Mets are off to a great start. Now, the naysayers will say they always get off to a great start. Well, they do. It's a little bit different this year. They've got good pitching. They've got a great manager. And the players they brought in, guys like Escobar and Canna and Marte, they can play, man. They can play. And they brought in a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer in Max Scherzer.
It's got a different feel to it because of Buck. And it's got a different feel because the guys that they brought in here are all performing. And I said keep their head above water until DeGrom comes back. I mean, they're doing that so far. And we'll see if DeGrom comes back, when DeGrom comes back. But if he can, you know, now we're talking about adding a Cy Young Award winner to already what's been the best rotation in baseball. So this has been fun to watch.
The Michael K. Show.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, terrible.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, what a day. What a day.
Don't do that to me as I'm about to swallow my coffee. Wow. That was almost a spit take.
If you watched the Nets last night, that was a spit take. They're up by 17 in the second quarter, and they let it get away. Second half was completely different. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, they were the gang that couldn't shoot straight. They were terrible. And these were players that are two of the greatest players in the history of the league, although for some reason Kyrie didn't make the top 75 when it was voted on, maybe – because he's missed a lot of time, but he's a great, great player. And the Celtics have found a way to neutralize Durant in games 1 and 2. And after Kyrie embarrassed them, but they still won in game 1, it was a completely different player in game 2. They were awful. The two of them were awful. And it just stands out more because of how great they are. Every time Kevin Durant is on the court, he's getting beaten up. And I'm not saying in a way that they should be calling fouls. He's getting banged around. When he crosses a court, he's running without the ball. Gets hit at least 3 times. TNT had a great sequence yesterday showing how hard he gets hit every single time he's on the court. And then when he has the ball, they throw 2-3 guys at him. And Peter, you saw it last night. He was handling the ball like Julius Randle.
Yeah.
Too many turnovers. He can't turn the ball over that much.
Yep. It's I got to tell you, Michael, it's I you know, I really don't like get any pleasure out of beating up on coaches, but I mean, this is it's only 2 games in, and this whole thing could turn around and then all of a sudden Steve Nash looks like a genius. But if you were to say right at this second, Michael, you would say that maybe the most standout thing in this series beyond the play, because the superstars have all been up and down. When you really look at, you know, Tatum, KD and Kyrie, even if you want to include Jaylen Brown, those guys have all been whatever. They kind of have nullified each other. But Steve Nash getting out-coached big time by Ime Udoka right now. That's really what's happening, is there are schemes and a style of play that is working wonders for the Celtics and really, really allowed you to feel like they were in the game last night. I'll tell you honestly, as a Celtics fan, I never was really worried. Even when they were down big, I wasn't really worried.
Now, Greeny, you know, hosts the NBA pre- and halftime and postgame show for ESPN and ABC, he talked about Nash and what a big deal Nash is.
I don't believe the Nets are being coached. I don't understand what's going on out there, and maybe that's their own choosing. KD and Kyrie made it pretty clear they didn't want to be coached, and they're not being coached. because I don't see a single adjustment. I don't see a single play being run. I don't see them doing any of the things that were working early in that game. As soon as Boston made an adjustment on the defensive end, I don't see them finding ways to get guys cutting to the basket and throwing up lobs when they get the doubles that come every now and again. I don't see any opportunities for Patty Mills and Seth Curry and all these guys, Dragic, all these guys who can shoot threes to spread the floor. They are playing right into the Celtics' hands. They have to this point done nothing that I can identify to adjust to what is being done. So if this is a chess match, and thus far, again, all the Celtics have really done, as dramatic as it has been, is hold serve. As the Nets go home, Steve Nash, it's your move.
Now, if the Nets won that game last night, we were talking about what a great game Seth Curry had. Big shots. And Brown had a great game, too, after a lousy game by opening his mouth in game one. But, you know, he was up. He scored the first 9 points of the game. Now, let's hear from Nash. So, Nash was asked, what did they do to stop KD?
Well, I think they're being physical, grabbing him, holding him, all that stuff that you come to expect. You know, he's been uncomfortable. He hasn't looked like he's been able to quite get his rhythm. But, you know, there's other areas of the game that we got to improve at. You know, we made some big strides in the first half, played a lot better, and now we have to sustain it for two halves.
And he was also asked why Kyrie played so poorly.
You know, we just didn't have a great shooting half, the second half. You know, I wouldn't want to single out Kyrie here. I think it's, you know, he had 39 last time out. You're not going to have 39 every night. And get back to Brooklyn, take a look at the tape, try to help these guys, try to help them improve and give them new ways to attack and come out with some juice on Saturday.
Now, I think, obviously, they'll have the crowd on their side. The crowd was not that loud with Kyrie as they were in game one, and they were told constantly on the board and all the message boards at TD Garden, anybody who's abusive to the players, they will be thrown out and their season tickets will be revoked. So I'm sure that had an effect as well. I mean, they booed when he had the ball, but he didn't seem like he was as sharp as he was in game one. And, you know, Durant, I mean, what's it explain about Durant? The thing that impressed me the most, and Peter, you watch them more than I do, but the Celtics defense was suffocating, especially on those two guys. Now, maybe that's why Curry had such a good game, because they let him, you know, we're not letting Durant and Kyrie beat us. And if you guys can hit shots, well, hit them. And they did. But Durant and Kyrie have to score. And they were swarming all over KD. They would never let him get an open look. So I give them credit, too. I'm not just going to say that KD had a bad game. The defense made him have a bad game.
Yeah, that's the thing. You really can't even for a second act as if it was just a struggle. It was unusual. I don't recall the last time I saw stars shut down in that way. Michael, it looked like any time in the second half Kyrie and KD were shooting the ball, they couldn't get a clean shot. But someone's hands on the ball, someone swiping at them as they try to get into the paint. Everything was difficult, and it was – I mean, listen, I could sit here and sing the praises of Marcus Smart all day. You know, I know when I named that song after him, a lot of people asked me why I like him, and Andrew told me that, like, he's such an annoying guy to play against, you know, when his Sixers are playing the Celtics. But, God, guys, isn't Marcus Smart the kind of player everyone wants on their team?
You want him on your team. You hate him if he's not on you, if he's against you.
Because he never stops.
Right.
He's relentless. He's annoyingly relentless. It never ends.
And then when he hit that shot at the end, Peter, when the Nets trying to make the left-handed shot.
Yep.
You know, he scores some big buckets, too.
Yeah, no, he can score, too. Marcus can shoot it. He does a lot well, man.
But the coaching's the issue here, and Steve and Greeny said it right. There's no plays. He's a cheerleader, and he's letting the players do what they want, and I guess that's by design. But when do you ever win a championship with a neophyte as a head coach? Now, you could say, well, Don, what about Spoelstra in Miami? Do you know how long he was an assistant before he finally got the head coaching job? Or Tyronn Lue in Cleveland? He had been an assistant and an associate coach in Boston and in Cleveland before he got the head coaching job. Now, granted, those were probably guys that let, you know, the superstars be the superstars. But you got to have some background. And Nash had zero experience, none, taking that job last year. Zero. Now, he was a great player, a Hall of Fame player, but he didn't pay his dues as an assistant, you know, bouncing around from team to team or going down to the G League and coaching or anything. And so how do I know that he's going to be able to make the necessary adjustments? And you can't afford to get out-coached in the postseason. Who else has been able to do it? Tell me. Just walk right off the playing field and just jump in and help a team win a championship. Maybe he will eventually become a great coach. Spoelstra's obviously turned out to be one of the best coaches there is. You know, so you with time, I'm sure Nash can become a great coach, but can you expect somebody in just his second year to be able to go out there and win playoff games and set plays and not allow his team to be outcoached?
Well, and also why is he the coach? What expectation did they have? Did they really think he was going to be an in-game strategist? Like, that's truly what his coaching was? Or was it, you're going to be liked by the star players we have? And, you know, guys.
I just don't think those guys want to be coached that hard.
I was going to say, Katie and Kyrie don't want Tibbs.
No, they would rebel against it. They didn't want Atkinson. Atkinson is Tibbs light.
Exactly. Right.
Then go out and get an experienced coach with the understanding, you know what, leave me alone. Let me do what I do. But the other players need to be coached. You just need to have some sort of a plan. It can't just be about those two guys freelancing their way through games. There's other players. There's other moments. You got to score points and defend when they're not on the floor. You got to try to win games when those guys aren't doing well. You got KD had finished with a bunch of points. He was not shooting well. They got 10 points from Kyrie. So come up with something else. Figure something else out.
Yeah, you're right about that because, you know, when do you call a timeout, plays out of breaks and stuff like that. You're just not seeing that from the net. So leave those two guys alone.
Yeah.
And do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, so go get Mark Jackson. And just the understanding is, listen, I'm sure a guy like Mark Jackson or even a Van Gundy understands the modern game and realizes I'm going to let my best players kind of do what they want to do. But I'm also going to coach the rest of the team, and I'm also going to set plays and try to figure out a way out of this. And when things are when your way's not working, that I can develop some other way to find a way to win a game.
Now, these are numbers that will illuminate how bad it is for the Nets right now. So Durant had 27 points, but he's 18 for 20 from the line, 4 for 17 with 6 turnovers. Irving was 4 for 13, held to just 10 points. Now, in the two net losses, Durant is shooting just 31.7%, 13 for 41 overall. It's the first time in his career he has shot under 40% and committed at least 6 turnovers in consecutive games. Now, how about being down 2-0? Teams that go up 2-0 in a 7-game series, according to Brian Lewis of the New York Post, win 92.4% of the time. The record is 302 series wins to 25 losses. The Nets, in their career, they're a winless 0-7 on the other end of that equation. Now, that doesn't really mean that much to me because that's a different net team than previous net teams that might have lost with Otis Birdsong or Bernard King or Mike Jaminski, but that's the number. But the overall number, 2-0 up in 7-game series, you win 92.4% of the time. So, in short, it doesn't look great for the Nets.
Now, they are going home, but they're still going to have to figure out a way to win on the road if they're going to win this series.
And Michael's been saying it the whole time, and they got to get a good game from both Kyrie and KD.
And also, you know, we're talking about getting out of the first round, but when you start thinking about this team winning a championship, now they're pretty much locked in, Peter, you would think, to probably going, unless they win the next 4 straight, having to win a game 7 in Boston. So what does that do to them as far as now trying to make a run when, you know, the Sixers are on the verge of winning in a sweep? Like, so how much is that going to catch up with you? Because you think it's going to get any easier down the road?
Now, it's the first time in 55 games as teammates, regular and postseason, that both Kyrie and KD shot worse than 33%. Also, a Celtics stat. The Celtics are 40-1 all-time when holding a 2-0 series lead. Again, that doesn't really mean that much to me. You know, John Havlicek's not walking through that door. Larry Bird's not. Bill Russell's not. So a lot of that was compiled during those years, but it does tell you how hard it is to come back from 2-0.
The number is, and it's so true. You know, it's, you know, nobody's ever come back from 3-0. You see those stats 2-0, which is surprising because I'm sure in the other sports, Michael, it's not 92.4% in baseball and hockey. No way. But basketball, it really holds true. How important home court is in the playoffs, and for a team to win back to back games tells you that maybe. Obviously, the stats show you that they're the superior team and they're going to win north of 90% of the time. So, yeah, history doesn't matter, but it just shows you how hard it is to spot a team, no matter where they are, 2 games, and expect to go out there. And now they got to turn around, Michael, after everything that's happened, and win 4 of the next 5.
Let's go to Dominic in North Arlington. Dom.
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. First, I just want to say your show is awesome. I listen to you guys every day on my hour and a half ride home.
Thank you, man. Thanks so much.
Good. Peter would appreciate this. I'm a huge Celtic fan my whole life. Watching them play these last two games, it's clearly easy to see that they're being outcoached. Multiple times in both games, when Durant hovers around the top of the key, they run a zone defense, and when he goes either way, somebody's there to pick him up. And you blame the coach. Move your offensive player on the other side of the court to give him a lane. And it constantly happens. The Nets will never beat this team doing what they're doing.
I think I would agree with you, Dominic. They've got to come. Now, he does have experienced coaches on the bench. So you would think that between last night and Saturday when they play game three, they have to come up with something. And they have to sit down with KD and Kyrie, too. What do we come up with? Let them be part of the plan. You know, they're out there. What's going to work for you? Now, a lot of people are saying they should play Blake Griffin more. They haven't played Blake Griffin important minutes most of the year. Now you're going to throw him into game three? Now, I'm surprised they didn't play Aldridge that much.
Yeah, what's behind that?
I don't know. Let's go to Mac and Randolph. Matt.
Hey, guys. I just want to say I don't feel like Steve Nash should be blamed as much, just because when you were describing him as a cheerleader, that sounds exactly like what KD and Kyrie said in the beginning of the year they kind of wanted.
Yep, you're
like,
right.
You know, everyone was jumping on LeBron for bringing Russ in. I feel like this is the same kind of situation, you know, or blame the front office for allowing the players to make this decision, you know?
You're absolutely 1,000% right. It's on them. So they got rid of a real good coach in Kenny Atkinson. I'm not turning Kenny Atkinson into Greg Popovich, but that guy turned this franchise around without stars.
Yeah, there was no reason for him to be fired as far as like wins and losses were concerned.
No, they didn't want to be nudged. They didn't want a guy who was going to constantly coach them. They didn't want it. And they can say all they want, but they actually have said it. They slipped in public saying it. You know, we're going to coach ourselves. That's from Kyrie. So that right away puts Nash behind the eight ball. So we could blame him for not being a great coach, but blame the guys that forced the front office to do this, and blame the front office for giving in. So when you sell your soul to stars, those stars better be good. Those stars better come through in the clutch, because if they don't, then you've sold your soul for nothing.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, man, if you could ask them privately what Sean Marks thinks now. Is he glad this is the path that he did? Because essentially you said the talent is so good, we're going to push all our chips in and hope this thing works out. But as a result, you have so little you can do. They're now at the whim of those guys. And if they don't get a championship, then what was it all for?
I don't think, Peter, that you could have ever turned down the opportunity to get KD and Kyrie. But the James Harden deal will be the one that will always be highlighted. Did they really need to go for the third star? Because you look at what they gave. Forget about all the other pieces. You gave up Jared Allen. The one thing that they don't have on this team is rim protection, size in the middle. That guy was a homegrown star. And you gave him up for James Harden. James Harden was awful. Whined his way out. You got Ben Simmons, who hasn't been on the court yet. There's talk that he might be there for game four. I don't know if he could play game four. Why not game three? But that's the one you're going to really have to question. There's no way any team would have turned down KD and Kyrie. But the James Harden thing, that was going the extra mile.
But by the way,
probably didn't have to go.
But I mean, listen, I hate to be this guy, Michael, but you may remember, I said at the time I didn't quite understand why it was needed. You didn't have to be a rocket scientist to think they gave up a lot of pieces that are the kind of little pieces a championship team needs. And with two superstars and those pieces, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, that team wouldn't have been enough to compete? Well, they'd be better than what they are now.
But because they probably didn't think they can count on Kyrie every night.
That's probably it, Don.
And they were right. For whatever reason, something was going to happen. We need to bring in somebody else here when Kyrie goes off and decides to do something politically, or who knew about with the vaccination and everything. Like, there was obviously availability problems with Kyrie, and they wanted some insurance.
Now, it's going to be interesting. They're almost locked into giving Kyrie whatever he wants when he opts out of his deal. But if they really think, wow, this turned into an unmitigated mess, do they stand up and cleanse themselves and go, you know what, Kyrie, we're good? Like, bring Don in and just say, we're good. And then would KD leave? I think he would. He'd say, I want out. That's why it's so difficult, because they're tied at the hip.
Well, they're tied at the hip for now. But
he has supported him through everything.
I know, through everything, but a disastrous first-round exit. I mean, what if this team gets swept? I mean, there's going to be a lot of finger-pointing, and there's going to be a lot of, all right, who's responsible for this? What do we do? And, you know, I we've seen KD take more of a leadership role here, I think, over the last month or so, right, Peter? More so than we've ever probably seen him any other place. I don't think everything's forever. Could there be a time where KD says, hey, I want to get a ring here. Are you helping me or hindering me here? We need a better coach. We need a little bit more stability. I don't know. Because they could just turn around, Michael, after this is over and say, hey, we lost the game by 7 points where Kyrie had 10 points and KD shot 25%. If we play better, we win the game going away. So maybe they won't be swayed. Hey, listen, it's still on us, and we won't play this poorly again.
Now let's talk to our guy, knows more basketball than any of us, and that is Alan Hahn. You could hear him, Barton Hahn, from noon to 3 right before our show. So Alan will join us in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.